Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I know the first thing you want to know is what is up with that title. And I'll get into the motivation behind it a little bit later on, but I know it's long. It's a clunky title, and it might not be for everyone. I talk to people in marketing companies and who work in that world, and they actually, most of them liked it. Other people can't stand it. My girlfriend, not a big fan. I will talk in a bit about why I chose that title. But first, thank you very much for everyone listening. This is a very different project than what I've done in radio, in sports, in TV. It's even a little bit different than the other podcast I do, which I highly recommend. Obviously, I'm biased. The Matt Cohen Cause podcast. There'll be some elements of that in this in terms of the tone of the interviews and the tone of just what I want this podcast to be about. But this is a new venture, an exciting one, and one that I hope goes on for a long time. And if you are listening to the first one, I'll say this, it will be different in terms of the type of guests, again, the tone of it, and just what we want to try to get across. So this is the first episode. I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm curious about the journey, and I hope everyone listening will come on board and they'll get other people to join as long as well. Join as long as well. Wow, that's professional. but first, before I want to talk about what this podcast is about, how I got into wine, my basic philosophy of wine. Also, I'm going to give you tips about how to be a wine expert without any knowledge whatsoever. If you ever wanted to be a wine D-bag or a wine expert, but you don't want to, you know, study, then you're going to want to keep listening. Also, I'm going to try to end every episode with a wine recommendation. And the first one is actually going to be the wine I've drank more of than any other bottle of wine on planet Earth. So that'll be at the end. Just real quick, a bunch of years ago, I started studying wine. And the school I chose was called IWIG or WSET. And I knew other people that did it, and they recommended I go that way. I'm a diploma level. So I graduated a couple of years ago, went to London, England, for my graduation, and Jancis Robinson was there. And it's funny because she's like one of the biggest celebrities in the wine world, but when you see her up close, she just, you know, looks like a regular person and wasn't all dressed up all fancy. Didn't matter. I was too intimidated to go talk to her. And, you know, my girlfriend and her twin sister are like, go. And I'm like, I can't look. It's Jancis. And, you know, why is she going to want to talk to me? So I did that. Also, if you watch those Somm movies, you know, there's the Quartermaster Sommelier. There's four levels. I got my introductory level. And then on the certified, I passed the theory and I passed the tasting, and then I spectacularly failed the service. I mean, it was, I made a mistake early on about where you have to place the glass, and then that just screwed me up because then I placed the glass at the wrong spot for everyone else at the table. And then when I was pouring the champagne into the flutes, my arm had to go right over the face of my of the person marking the judge. And that freaked me out. And let's just say the outside of the flute was like, that was basically Niagara Falls, just sparkling wine cascading all over the place. It was a spectacular failure. I mean, part of it, just my hands were a little bit shaky. I was nervous. I don't work in the service industry, but nonetheless, I screwed up. I'd like to get that again at some point, get my certified. So that's my bona fides. WSET diploma graduate, 1¾ on the Quartermaster Sommelier. I host wine events from corporate to events at the National Club, including black tie dinners, fun competitions where we'll, you know, debate Chardonnay from Sonoma versus Burgundy, or Riesling from Moselle versus St. Catharines. And those are fun. But I've gone from private parties in the beaches which if you're listening outside of Southern Ontario, it's just a kind of a nice fancy neighborhood in the eastern part of Toronto. And I've done bachelorettes. I'm actually prepping. I'm doing a bachelorette party in about a week and a half from now, and that should be a lot of fun. So that's my bona fides. By the way, every time I'm just going to take a little sip of this wine. Yeah, that's horrible pod. I admit, that's a horrible podcast for me to do that. But what are you going to do? What this podcast is about. Generally, you know, if I'm going to steal, and we all steal, it's I kind of always imagine this in the spirit of comedians in cars getting coffee, the great Jerry Seinfeld web series. This podcast is going to be biographical style interviews with interesting people that's going to focus on their love, hate, curious relationship with wine, and the fascinating lives they've lived. And I'm talking about everyone from comedians, winemakers, wine owners, restaurant managers, sommeliers, master somms, people in the world of sports, which is a lot of my background. And the thing you find is that people in sports love wine. You know, you hear about Mario Lemieux and his crazy Bordeaux collection. You know, guys at TSN from, you know, Pierre LeBrun and Bob McKenzie, and even lighter-hearted guys like Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole. I've sometimes given them wine advice, and I'd love for them to come on because, and this is going to be the hard part of this podcast, I'm really trying to make it for both hardcore wine people and for just general wine enthusiasts. And that's going to be the hardest push and pull for me. How do I deliver content that will satiate both groups? Because they are both connected in terms of their love of wine, but they are different. I mean, people that, you know, the hardcore wine people, they've been in this business for a long time. And I can tell you, it's not as glamorous as you think. They don't make a ton of money. Now, they get to try some killer vino, and they do get to travel sometimes on other people's dime. But they study and they work so hard. I can't tell you how impressed, sometimes intimidated I am by these people. And then there's the wine enthusiasts, which is where I you know, spent so much of my life. I'm somewhere in between the two groups. And for those people, and for a lot of you guys listening, I want, hopefully you learn something from this pod. But more importantly, I hope I can take away the intimidation that happens so much in wine. Whether, you know, you're at the LCBO and you don't know what to get, or you're at a fancy restaurant and they just plunk down the wine list and it looks like a wizard spell book. Like it looks like something Gandalf would use to fight orcs and giants and trolls and such. And you get intimidated because there's so many choices out there. And what I want to try to impress upon you is that you don't need to be intimidated. You know, wine is fun. It's great. It's curious. You get to try different wines from all over the world and they taste so different. And why is it this Burgundy from a tiny, you know, three rows of vines and grapes? Why does it taste so differently in 2011 and versus 12? Like, I find that stuff fascinating. And I want to impart some of that on you guys. And then for the hardcore people, hopefully you'll get to hear from, you know, Bruce Wallner or Jennifer Huther, master somms, or you'll get to hear, you know, from, like, I have an interview coming up with a real prince, a legitimate prince from Tuscany. His wines is Corsini Wines, and that's his name. You know, a really interesting interview with a guy who started off taking over his parents' vineyards that were used for bulk wine, you know, and he eventually transformed it into, I don't want to go cult classic level, but really sought after, damn good Chianti Classico. And so hopefully I can introduce, especially the hardcore people, hey, these are people in the wine industry that I've heard of, but I'm going to hear them in an interview, and I'm going to do my best to get something out of them that you haven't heard before. It's always a goal of mine, is to ask them something a little bit different, give them something that you haven't read in an interview or haven't Googled. So that for me is kind of what this podcast is all about. And the reason for the title, Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People, is I wanted people to realize right away that this is not a hardcore, pretentious sort of wine podcast. And by the way, there are so many good ones that aren't. You know, there's so, and I'll send out links to other good wine podcasts, but I don't want anyone thinking this is going to be all tannin talk and we're going to sit there and we're going to swirl and slurp. And because sometimes I want to talk about the joys of box wine, and it's not always going to be about comparing the 09 versus 2010 Bordeaux vintage. Now, by the way, you know, with the right person on, I'd love to actually spend 20 minutes talking about it, because 9 and 10 were such different years, both very good. And now 15 is looking like it could be the next really good vintage. So I want to do a little bit of everything. That's sort of it. And I want to try to find that right tone. So that's going to be the challenge for me. And hopefully it'll get better as this podcast goes on. So the one thing I always wonder about, and you can tweet me, mcause56. I always like to know, how did you get into wine at whatever level? You know, there's someone listening right now who, you know, maybe is a wine manager at a high-end restaurant, and they've got their credentials are as good, if not better than mine. I'm curious, how did you get into it? And for the average person, what was it? You know, did it start like so many people? Bad wine in high school, like, you know, Blue Nun, or, you know, just sweet syrupy stuff, some sort of white Zinfandel or Moscato. And, you know, it's like, hey, it's $11. It's got a little bit of sweetness to it, and I can get drunk. And I'm, quite frankly, I'm tired of drinking, you know, Bud Light. You know, is that how you got into it? And for me, and again, that's bad pod. All right, I'm gonna have to talk about this. Do I drink? Because I'm gonna talk about this wine at the end that I'm drinking right now. I'll save the title to the end. But do I drink while I'm on air? I mean, it's easier to have an interview, because when they're talking, like when I do my podcast with Bob, when he's talking, I can take a sip. But now it's just me. And every now and then I will do individual podcasts where it's just me on my own. And they'll be shorter. They won't be as long as the ones with guests. If I have some wine thoughts or some, I want to give you some recommendations. But anyway, how I got into wine, you know, when I was in my 20s. I didn't know much about it. I remember one time, you know, like 23, 24, I thought Merlot meant Italian wine. You know, I didn't even realize it was a grape. And I mean, though, yes, you do get some single varietal Merlot, and Merlot is blended, you know, Super Tuscans, and, you know, you will find it out there. I mean, if I'm going to be wrong, I could have been less wrong and said, oh yeah, Merlot, it's a French wine. That would have made more sense. But that's, you know, how little I knew. And then my stepdad, Sesto, he had a friend over who used to be the head of the police union. And this guy, Rick, loves wine, loves it. And he brought over some old bottles of Barolo. And I was having dinner with Sesto. He was having a guy's night, a bunch of guys, everyone cooking. And it was great because they're all older and a little more, you know, world. They know the world better than I did as a mid-20s kid or adult, I guess. And so great cooks, and they brought great wine. But this Barolo, they poured it for me, poured me a glass, a little glass. And it was brick orange. And I'm looking at the glass, and I'm like, what the is going on? I mean, this looks disgusting. Wine is not brick orange. And then I tried a sip, and I'm not lying. I got goosebumps, and my hair started to rise because it was so good. And I enjoyed it so much, and I realized how wrong I was. I actually started laughing. So imagine, like, I was probably like 26, 27. This 27-year-old sitting down, maniacally laughing, now clutching this glass of wine with two hands and trying to pour the glass right up to the edge. And like Daffy Duck just holding on to a pearl, saying, mine, mine, mine. That was me. And I was just shocked by it. I'm like, where did this come from? Why does this taste so good? I'm like, I wanted to learn more. And then so there was that incident. Then a couple months later, same thing, stepdad. And at Christmas, he had a Magnum. And I forget which wine it was, which always kills me. I know it was Italian, but I don't remember what. And I was laughing because I hadn't really seen many Magnums. Again, it was a dummy with wine. You know, wasn't around that world. And I remember laughing, thinking, we're never going to get through this bottle of wine. This is crazy. And this was for Christmas dinner. Well, it was opened. It was decanted. And it barely made it to dinner. And there was a lot of people there. This wasn't some big piss fest. And I remember calling my older brother, Scott. I'm like, Scott, get over here. This wine is great and it's going fast. And get over here before I drink it because I, you know, don't have a lot of self-control and I'm greedy. And it was those two sort of incidents that started me realizing, okay, there's more going on here. I want to learn. And what I would then do, and by the way, this is a tip for everyone new getting into wine. When you go to restaurants, you know, buy the glass or buy the bottle. If you get something new, write down the name of the producer, but more importantly, what's the grape and where is it from? And back then, I really liked the big California Zinfandels. So I tried one that I loved, and it was from an area called Lodi, L-O-D-I. Well, all right, I just wrote down the name. And then, you know, the next time I went somewhere and I saw a Lodi Zinfandel, I was like, I tried it. And there I learned something. And then I would Google, oh, okay, it's Appalachian, the here in California, dry, and it's famous for its Zinfandels. Bam, I learned. With nothing more than just writing something down. So I started doing that more and more. Then I started taking the classes. And the thing is, early on, it's not a ton of work. It gets more as you go up in levels. And I find that either people love it or they get out of it entirely. And I'm one of those people that just immediately loved it. And it's one of my philosophies in life. Actually, it's my number one philosophy. If you like everything, you love nothing. There's 24 hours in a day. You got to sleep. You got to, you know, go buy groceries, drive to work, pick up laundry, do laundry. You know, there's all so many hours of your day are spent doing things that you have no choice to do or you'll die or, you know, at the very least your shirt will smell. So you have to sort of pick. And wine became a big part of my life. Now, one of the negatives is someone who's done a bunch of marathons. Well, it's been a while since I've done a marathon because, you know, other things take over. And, you know, you spend a little more money and you probably gain a couple pounds, but it's all entirely worth it. So that is how I got into wine. Now, my basic philosophy, and there's going to be a lot of what I say now that is totally Captain Obvious. If you like it, then it's good. Plain and simple. With the exception of, Yellowtail or Fusion, there are some wines I don't even mind. Yeah, and this is not about price. One of the podcasts, I'll tell you about a bottle of wine that's under $9 I love. And I've tried $500 bottles of wine that I absolutely hated. But there are some that are just so chemical and so much sugar. And it doesn't even taste like wine. It's like red juice with sugar. But for the most part, if you like the wine, then it is good. And I can't stress that enough. It's the basic philosophy. And the great thing about wine is, you know, you have all different kinds. You have your weekday wine. And that one doesn't have to be super expensive and one that you're brooding over. And, you know, you're really getting into the aromatics and wondering, you know, what sort of tertiary comments are coming into my brain? And is that a wood spice, more of a kitchen spice, a Christmas spice? No, it's just yum. It's a good glass. I enjoy it. Moving on. And then, you know, you got your Friday wine, your weekend wine, your one for anniversaries. Those ones should be a little bit nicer, should be a little bit better. And, you know, but in the end, try as much as you can. And you're going to hate some wine. And that's good. Because again, if you like everything, you love nothing. And then there'll be other wines that you find and you absolutely love. And again, write it down. And also, don't worry if your tastes change. At some point, there's going to be wine, like especially if you're younger. You know, I found when I was younger, I drank mostly red, very little white. It was mostly New World. Second little tip. And again, for the hardcore wine people, I apologize. I'll keep this quick. Old World, New World basically means geographically where was the grapes from. And here's the simplest way. If a world war was fought on that land, it's Old World. So basically most of Europe. If a world war wasn't fought on that land, then it's New World. North America, South America, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. They sometimes say they're Old World. It's a debate for another day. Anyway, that's Old World, New World. So when I started out, I was a mostly red, mostly New World. And now it's basically 50-50. I'll drink certain Chardonnays with steak, and I drink more Old World than New World. Don't worry, I'm not French snob, though France does make the best wine. I'm not French snob. I still like plenty of California and Canadian wines. I'll do tons on Canadian wines. There's so much good Canadian wine. And this isn't chip on the shoulder Canadian guy. I'll tell you, there's a lot of bad Canadian wine as well. So that's my basic philosophy. Now, I want to go over with people, and this is a little bit for everyone, because if you're a hardcore wine person, you understand what I'm going to say. But I want to give you guys, and I'll try to do this as often as I can, tips on how to be a wine expert. Now, there's the one way where you study lots and you go to school and you train for it, like I did, and like a lot of the people listening did. Or there's ways you can fake out anyone at a restaurant, at a party, do these things, and suddenly you will seem like the expert in the crowd. Now, there's one caveat. If there is a true wine expert there and they call you out on it and then they want more depth and they start asking you questions, run. I'm serious. Just run away. This works best because what I'm going to tell you, because people get intimidated by wine. So if you say something declarative and you're really confident in it, then woo-hoo-hoo, everyone's just going to believe you. The first thing you got to do at any party you're at, or even at a restaurant, you know, to quote Alec Baldwin from Glengarry Glen Ross, but I change it up a little bit, always be swirling. Let me repeat myself. Always be swirling. Swirling your glass creates the illusion that you know everything about what's in the glass. Now, technically, you should always want to be swirling. I swirl all the time, even when I'm not sniffing. But always swirl your glass. Yes, technically, it helps to release the wine aromatics. By the way, aromatics just means smell. But if you do it, trust me, I'm doing it right now, and I feel like I know more about what's in my glass than what I really do. Other things to do. Sometimes just smell the wine without taking a sip. Because it shows, they're studying this wine so hard, they don't want booze down their throat. They just want to smell it. They're not in it for the alcohol or, you know, the pleasant feeling of getting tipsy. They're in it just to smell it. And if you can nod your head after you smell it, it's even a little bit better. I'm not going to lie to you. So if you do that, bang, you look like an expert. When you're describing a wine, be really, really specific. You can say something smells like mango, but underripe, overripe mango, better. Slightly bruised pear, great. Let me give an example. I get lemon notes. That's nice. Lemon peel, lemon zest, lemon juice. Now, again, for the hardcores, they actually do mean different things, but that's at a whole other level. If you just, you know, you're drinking a Pinot Grigio, and, you know, usually there's going to be some lemon lime there. It's kind of on all of them, at least the stuff we get mostly here in Canada. Just say, hey, yeah, I got, it's like a lemon rind kind of smell. Bang. Now you look like more of an expert. Oh, that's the first time my phone's gone off. And we've been doing this podcast for 23 minutes. That's pretty good. The last tip I'll give you, because I'm going to try to do these over many podcasts, is order something different by the glass. If you're at a restaurant, like a nice restaurant that really focuses on wine, they'll have seven, eight, nine different whites, reds. They usually throw in a couple rosés. So instead of normally going for the Chardonnay or the Pinot Grigio, and trust me, I usually order the Chardonnay. You see Grüner Veltliner or Gewürztraminer, order that. But go the extra distance. Explain to everyone how happy you are and surprise it's on the list. And don't use the full name. Abbreviate, because abbreviating creates an illusion of, you know, familiarity. So, you know, just explain to everyone, oh, they've got Grüner. Or when the waiter comes, say, oh, wow, that's great. You guys have Grüner on the list. And then order it. A couple of years ago, I was at a downtown restaurant here in Toronto, and I didn't even mean to do it. I don't usually see Grüner on the list by the glass. And I saw it. I'm like, and all I said, I didn't even do any of the extra things. I just said, yeah, can I get a glass of your Grüner? And the waiter said, oh, do you work in the business? So that could be you. That could 100% be you. So before I wrap it up, I'm going to try to do this every week, is I want to give you a wine recommendation. And this one is the wine I've drank more than any other. And it's the Cesare Mara. And it's the Valpolicella Ripasso. You'll find it in most wine stores, certainly in every LCBO. If you're listening outside of Ontario, go to your wine store. This one, they ship a lot of it to Canada. And if, by the way, if they don't have the Cesare Mara, just find yourself a good Ripasso. And, you know, this one, I won't go too much in the grapes. Corvina, Rondinella are the main two grapes. And they are, those ones are huge in the area where this wine is made, which is near Verona. And this wine is a Ripasso. And basically what that means is it undergoes a second fermentation or a double fermentation or repast. Basically what happens is this. The winemaker makes their Amarone. Amarone, bigger, more alcohol, and more expensive, usually around $50. So after they're done fermenting, all the skins and the lees and everything left over from the grapes that were used to make Amarone, they take all of that, and then they take the juice that's been fermented the first time, and they ferment it and pour it over all the extra stuff that's been left over from the Amarone. And I know as I'm explaining this horribly. Basically, think of it as a baby Amarone. And this second fermentation that they've now done, again, with the skins and the leaves left over from the recently fermented Amarone wines, the second fermentation, it increases the wine's alcoholic content up a little bit. It adds a little more color, texture, and flavor to the wine. And what's great is Ripasso is, it does have a little more depth and complexity than your regular Valpolicella. Like this is basically somewhere in between a Valpolicella and Amarone, somewhere in between is the Valpolicella Ripasso. So you get more depth, more character. This wine here, you know, medium ruby color, which I don't think I need to describe color. It's a podcast. Eventually, if we get video, that'll mean more. A lot of ripe cherry, raspberry, spicy notes, a little bit of wood. It's a dry wine, medium to full body, depends. Again, you got lots of cherry and a nice mouthfeel to this wine. And there it's a nice linger. There's a nice dark cherry linger to the end of it. There's depth. And one of the reasons why I've always bought this wine is it's not that expensive. I think this one now is creeping to around $20, but you know, I've been drinking this wine since it was around $14. And if you can find it, $14, $15, $16, even $17, this is a great value wine. And Amarone, I know everyone, oh, Amarone, but Amarone should only be drunk at certain times. It doesn't pair with a lot of food. It's really big. There's often a lot of alcohol. I mean, I admire a good Amarone, but it can be dangerous. It can wipe out your taste buds. So try the Cesare Mara Valpolicella Ripasso. It's my favorite wine. And you can tweet me again, mcos56. I'd love to know your thoughts. Maybe you like it. Maybe you hate it. And if you hate it, don't worry. Tell me you didn't like it. You know, I'd love to hear why. I didn't make this wine. I didn't pick the grapes. I didn't crush it. I didn't decide how long to ferment it or how to, you know, what aging vessels to use. Of course, for this price point, the aging vessels are pretty much set because, you know, you got to keep your costs low. Anyway, so that is it for the first edition. Coming up in the near future, we're going to have some Master Somms on, some of the smartest people in the wine world. This prince I was telling you about, Corsini from Italy, he is a really fascinating guy and makes a great wine. And basically, I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast will change. I'll try to do a better job. I can tell as I'm doing it, there's a lot of uhs because I'm used to talking with someone else. And I've been talking for 30 minutes on my own. And I know I'm a gas bag, but 30 minutes on my own is a long time. I hope you've enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts, things you'd like to hear, people you'd like to hear from, any tone you want changed, anything at all, because I want to go on this journey together with a lot of you. Again, from the hardcore to the wine enthusiast. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. If you got people that are getting into wine and want something a little bit different, a little more approachable, kind of like this wine, there's depth and character. but it's approachable and it's not that pretentious. And well, it's not that expensive. And this podcast is free. So tell anyone that you think would is into wine and wants a little bit more, learn a little bit more. That kind of stuff is always fantastic. Anyway, thank you for listening. This has been the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.